Chapter 14, The Perennial Problem of Finances. The group of women who met in 1893 to transform the medical school from a mental image into a physical reality had been lacking funds, but were abundantly supplied with faith. As the infant institution was born and struggled for existence, there never were sufficient funds to meet what appeared to be the minimum needs. Staff shortages were perennial. Stringent economy was necessary for medical supplies, and much of the teaching equipment had to be improvised. As the school moved from crisis to crisis, the faith of the founders was tested many times, but always the crisis was weathered. The school survived, and faith was rewarded. Dr. Brown epitomized the faith of that group. She had the unshakable certainty that this work was of God's design, and God was no man's debtor. She communicated her thought to some friends at home. We have been perplexed, but never in despair. Troubled, but never forsaken. How well I remember the first year the school was opened. A wealthy English traveler tried to throw cold water on our enthusiasm, telling us it was foolish for a handful of missionaries to attempt such a great work, and that we could never hope to succeed without some rich man to back us. Thank God, He, the source of all riches, has been behind us, and not only that, but as we have come to one difficult place after another, we have found His promise to Moses true to us also. Behold, I stand there before thou come. Exodus 17. The perpetual shortage of money called for considerable skill in business management. Dr. Brown developed the habit of going to the bazaar to lay in a 6-month supply of grain when it was most plentiful and at the lowest price. She had to learn the different types of grain for horses, cows, bullocks, and human beings. She would move from pile to pile of grain, sampling it by letting it trickle through her fingers, studying the texture and quality of the grain, and then settle down to a bargaining session with the merchant or farmer who was selling the produce. At one stage, in order to help provide an adequate diet for her large staff and student body, she had to superintend 6 cows, 2 bullocks, 1 horse, fowl and ducks, also a large vegetable garden which provided food for the table and green stuff for the animals. Fuel was another problem, as there was none of any type in the vicinity. She practiced economy at this point by buying a whole railway wagon of logs during the hot season. These were sawn, chopped, and stacked for the winter months. Coal was not obtainable, so she devised a system of using part wood, part cow manure dried in the sun and made into flat cakes. The latter was a typical village fuel. Sometimes, when the first of the month arrived, the treasurer had no money in hand to meet the commitments. This was a real trial of faith, and Miss Brown was heard to say, "Though we do cast our burden upon the Lord and believe He will supply all our need, it means some extra thought and strain when the first of the month comes and there is nothing in hand." This was the situation in early July 1906. The monthly bills were due to be met the next day, and Mr. Fife, the treasurer, had no money to pay them. As Miss Brown walked over to the hospital at 6:15 a.m., she heard some commotion, and a motor car appeared. It looked very much out of place and was surrounded by a crowd of curious spectators. The Nawab of Malerkotla, a princely state 28 miles away, had sent his new car to fetch the doctor, as one of the Nawab's wives was ill. As the car entered the city, word came that the emergency had passed. The baby had been born. However, the doctor was requested to visit the mother and child. Dr. Brown received a fee of 110 rupees, enabling her to pay the bills on time. Dr. Brown had planned to leave Ludhiana for her summer holiday in Kashmir on August 16, but on the previous day, a telegram arrived saying that the road was impassable because of rain and storms. The next day, she rejoiced in the delay when the Morning Post brought a letter from the government about a grant for equipment. The letter asked for information regarding the type of equipment required, diagrams, models, books, and the reply had to be sent immediately to meet the deadline for making the grant. Miss Brown felt it was a most fortunate set of circumstances which held her in Ludhiana for such an important letter. It would have been too late if the letter had been redirected to her vacation address in Kashmir. Preparing to leave for her summer vacation, Dr. Brown had been able to leave sufficient funds for the students' board and his staff housekeeping, but there was no money to leave with Sister Winifred for the day-to-day needs of the institution. Just before she was to leave, she received a telegram requesting her to visit Jind State, about 4 hours' journey in the opposite direction from Kashmir, to examine the Rani, who was ill. Dr. Brown arrived by train and was met by the Secretary of State for Jind State. He drove her to the palace, or at least to the point beyond which outside men might not go. A woman conducted the doctor to the Rani's quarters. The Rani, who had called for her services, was lying on a bed, looking as though she had no interest in anything. No air seemed to come down into the courtyard, and the Rani did not feel well enough to go up the steps to the roof. Some dozen women servants were sitting around, doing nothing and helping to create an oppressive atmosphere. Miss Brown sang some Punjabi hymns for them, and they responded enthusiastically. The Rani wanted her to stay and was most reluctant to let her catch the train at 9 p.m. At Ludhiana, Miss Brown changed to another train, which would take her on her way to Kashmir. She was met at the Ludhiana station by the school orderly, through whom she sent to Sister Winifred the fee she had collected from the Rani, 150 rupees. This was enough to cover running expenses, so Dr. Brown went to her vacation, happy in the thought that all the needs had been met. She thought again of the financial problem of the school. How could they possibly cut any more corners and still do an effective job? They had been forced to experiment with local supplies, which were certainly not of the best grade. Village medicines were used as much as possible. Distilled water was prepared by the compounders locally. They even made the country cotton wool absorbent so that it would be used for dressings. The present hot season had been very bad for the mustard crop, so the mustard oil would be very expensive. A great deal of this local oil was used in the dispensary, as the people had great faith in oily liniments. But as she reflected on the need for economy, she was reminded of the wonderful way God did supply every need. There had been times of worry and stress, but their faith had never gone unrewarded, and their needs had been met in many marvelous ways, and from the most unexpected quarters. After the opening of the Memorial Hospital, the increase in outpatients was so great that a dispensary was urgently needed to handle them. Where were the funds to come from? In the spring of 1902, the answer came. A local committee of the Victoria Memorial Fund voted to give 3,000 rupees to the hospital for a dispensary to be known as the Victoria Memorial Dispensary. The committee was composed of Hindu, Muslim, and Sikh men. Miss Brown saw this gesture as a vote of appreciation for the work which was being done for their women. The need for private wards was a pressing matter. It was a joyous occasion when a wealthy Sikh gentleman gave Dr. Brown a donation of 1,000 rupees toward this goal. Sardar Kishan Singh gave the first two of these new wards. He later installed electric bells in each ward and at the main gate of the hospital. This same friend had a telephone connected between the hospital and the doctor's house, which proved to be a great convenience and time saver. One high-caste gentleman, Lala Gwara Sainkar, diplomatically helped to solve a problem of major proportions, that of providing water which was not polluted by the touch of some low-caste person. He gave 600 rupees for the construction of a well inside the hospital compounds. Only a Brahmin was allowed to draw the water from the well. Thus, the high caste patients would be satisfied, and the other people would gladly drink the water without any hesitation. However, they could never touch the well, the ropes, or the bucket used in drawing the precious high caste water. Edith Brown had approved the construction of the well on these terms, knowing that it would in no way restrict the work of the hospital. In fact, it would make the work more effective, for more high caste people might overcome their qualms and allow themselves to be admitted as inpatients. Other local support in a time of crisis came when the deputy commissioner gave a grant of 500 rupees from municipal funds with a promise of 1,000 rupees the following year toward hospital construction. This grant was made on the basis that this institution was using much local labor in the building project and was therefore a very real famine relief program. The government was beginning to manifest growing interest in the work of the school and hospital. Government inspectors spoke highly of the possibilities in the young institution. One inspector wrote, "It is small yet and needs much, but I see in it a germ of what may be one of the most useful institutions in Punjab." In 1903, a closer connection was established with the government when a grant of 25,000 rupees was given for building a new wing on the hospital. This was the first sizable grant and opened the way for other grants to follow. It came at a time when more beds were urgently needed, and it brought the Memorial Hospital to 100-bed capacity, the size required for university affiliation. Since appeals were coming from various villages for dispensaries, Dr. Brown decided to try one of the villages of Rampur. However, the expense of the dispensary became too great, and some new method of reaching the people had to be found. Then the idea came to have a boat which would travel along the Sirhind Canal. The boat could stop at many villages and provide a much-needed service. It was decided to have one hospital assistant, one compounder, two nurses, and a Bible woman on the boat. The supporters overseas had been faithful in undergirding the work. As the circle of interested friends increased, the international aspect of the work became even more apparent. In 1904, an American committee was established in New York with Dr. Charles Cuthbert Hall, president of Union Theological Seminary, as chairman, and the Right Reverend Bishop Frederick Courtney as vice president. This committee developed out of a wave of interest which had manifested itself through information about the school in the Christian Herald. 8 scholarships were made available in the name of the Christian Herald, and readers contributed funds for the purchase of the institution's first X-ray machine, which arrived at Ludhiana in 1905. Also, at the Women's Medical College of Pennsylvania, a drive was undertaken to find support for the sister institution in India. 3 staff members at Ludhiana, Dr. Anna Fullerton, Dr. Mary Riggs Noble, and Dr. Alice B. Condict, were graduates of the Pennsylvania institution. Dr. Condict was in charge of the electrical department, and for the year 1906 reported on the wonders wrought by the X-ray machine. The treatment by light, electricity, Rontgen ray, and vibration has brought much delight to the frequenters of our hospital. The enthusiasm of last year's patients has followed us, and many serious cases have been brought to us by those who have received benefit. Our great static electric machine continued to be a source of delight to patients and visitors. Perhaps the most common cause of the people's coming to us has been their suffering from enlarged spleens. We have had the pleasure of completely curing or materially reducing 53 such cases. The report of a few of these cases was greatly appreciated by friends in New York City, who published it in full as being the first work of this kind they had heard of. The school was living up to the vision of its founders. In faith, the needs were being met, and new areas of concern and service were continually opening.